Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, November 15th, 2012. This year is almost over, the big 2012. At any rate, a couple quick notes here. Tonight's main science topic, I will be talking about a possible, and I don't even know the possibility, the probability. I can't put a probable number on it, like 1% or 99% or anywhere in between, of a modern day Passover. So I'm talking about January of 2014. There's all kinds of things that could happen between now and then regarding Comet C2012-S1. And the point is that the comet at that point, I spoke last week, let me just point out that I talked about last week, and just about every week since this comet was announced in September, the previous week's shows I've been talking about this comet, and all of the various electrical alignments and potential issues it can have. And in January of 2014, Earth will have a five-way alignment. I talked about that. But leading up to the potential that we could see what I call the red hand of death. And it might not be as extreme as the case that happened with the ancient Egyptians, with the Israelites when they were leaving Egypt, what was spoken of by the Mayas, the Lakota Indians, etc., etc. It may be just a touch of that. And it's hard to say how much we will have, if any at all. But I think we're going to see a real show going on. And so anyway, I want people to understand what the conditions could be like. So I'm going to review in history. What was the Passover? What was it all about? What was happening, and what is modern, our modern government, if you want to call it that, controlled news media and science, who don't really know their left hand from their right hand. This leaves the public in a very vulnerable position. NASA is being quiet as a church mouse over this whole comet issue. And so, anyway, that's what I want to concentrate on tonight. But first, quite a few announcements. Just remember that I have a 2-CD set. It's called Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters. 18 hours of lectures, and it's something that you might want to listen to along with all of these shows, because it's packed with information about ancient celestial disasters that come from the things that come from the heavens, not just collisions with Earth. In fact, it's safe to say that very few of Earth's celestial disasters came by way of a colliding asteroid. Very few. The majority have come when something big comes through the solar system and passes through the inner solar system, causing huge effects on the sun. Sometimes they come close to Earth, sometimes they do not. This comet next year will not come especially close to Earth. But as it moves out in its orbit, it will be up and above Earth, and it'll have a very special alignment with Jupiter. As that alignment with Jupiter breaks, it could snap in and connect to Earth. With sulfur dioxide coming in from the region around Jupiter, we know Jupiter area is rich in sulfur dioxide, and so we could have some kind of event here, including auroras. It might not be the kind of thing that would kill a lot of people. I think the fright factor would be more, and that's why I think it's important to tell people also, so that they are prepared just mentally that there's something that we're going to see here. So don't get your underwear in knots about it, so to speak, but be prepared. Just being prepared is very simple. Okay. So anyway, also remember the six-part special, the History Channel 2. There's History Channel and then History Channel 2. I'm a guest appearance on this, and it's a six-part series. It started last Friday. And by the way, there are links now on the internet on History Channel 2. If you go to there and you look up Countdown to Apocalypse, they already have the first episode up where you can watch it on the internet. So if you've missed it on TV, you can go to History Channel 2 webpage and see it. And every week, apparently, after they have the live airing of this show, you will be able to see it. And I can't say anything about content because that's my agreement with the History Channel until they have aired. But I'm in all of them, from what I understand. I'm in all six parts, but especially in part four. Okay, so anyway, the part four deals with prophecies of the Hopi. Just another quick comment. I did not get enough information to where I could really jump on this topic of G1.9. It's a controversial object in the sky, down in the southern region of the sky. The Spanish astronomers say that this is a dwarf planet that's coming into our solar system. NASA does the way out there, way out of time, out of mind approach, and the Russians laugh at the NASA, which they generally are doing, saying that it's absurd, the NASA position, that this is somehow an exploding star, a nova. And they said it's absurd. The standard things you would look for to prove that it's a nova simply aren't there. So NASA doesn't know what it's doing. Big surprise. Okay, so at any rate, I will be talking more about that, G1.9. If there is an object out there, or if it is coming into our solar system from that point down below, it would fit the bill. That's all I can say. And I think, I have a feeling we are going to see multiple big comets in the solar system at one time again. And this is something that only happened in history. By the way, the comet C2012-S1 more and more is appearing to be the same comet that appeared in 1680, called the Great Comet of 1680, one of the largest comets visible in modern times. And even though it'll be a full 35 million miles away, that's about a third the distance from Earth to the Sun, off to our flank and above us, as it comes by Earth, we are going to have quite a light show. So at any rate, I'll be talking more about visibility tonight. And that's a topic, by the way, people are writing in, they're saying, please give us charts and diagrams so we know where to look for these objects. And so I'm working on that amongst many other tasks in my life. So at any rate, I'll be putting that up on the webpage, so just keep posted. Where to look, what to look for, etc. Okay. Okay, I mentioned about the alternative airings of the History Channel special. Okay, here's an interesting thing. CNN has been posting for days and days and days, just pounding on this, that there is some guy that filmed UFOs over Denver. And so it's not so much the filming, it's that NORAD and the U.S. Air Defense, it's almost scripted too poorly to believe, but it is. This is just a scripted piece of misinformation. So you have to ask the question, why is the standard news media, which is totally controlled, pounding on the idea that there are potential UFOs over Denver? And the main TV stations are carrying this also. But anyway, clearly it's some kind of mill, probably drone that's flying around, and this guy is filming it. Is what's comical is they go to the FAA, and the FAA goes, no, we don't see anything. Or, you know, they have some FAA expert on there, and he goes, yeah, it sure looks like a UFO. And and it's like I say, the bad acting is so bad that you can't even stomach it. But anyway, then they ask NORAD, our great air defense command, and they go, nope, we haven't seen nothing either. And so here you got a guy that's filming UFOs flying around Denver, and U.S. Air Command, which is based in Denver, goes, nope, didn't see nothing, see you, bye. doesn't investigate, doesn't find out what it is. The TV station goes out with their camera, sets it up and sees the same thing, but you good old U.S. Air Command doesn't do anything, doesn't look at it, doesn't bother. It's just like, ho-hum, they don't even mention that they're too busy to look at it. So just a constructed news story to try and pump this idea that there are UFOs out there. And whether there are or not, this is certainly a made-up story. And to try and catch the public and all the people out there that want to believe in UFOs, and at any rate, it's just a hoax, hokey story, let's put it that way. Mexico City, 6.0 earthquake. They had a 7.5 the other day. Looks like Mexico City could be rumbling again. And, of course, those big, two big, massive volcanoes off the southeast there, Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl, given the Aztec names for those mountains. Remember that Popo was quite active a number of years ago. Those babies could unload any day. I mean, they not just now, but at any time. And they are very much due, at least Popo is due for an explosion of some kind. They're quite a ways from Mexico City, but anyway, just interesting. Mexico City feeling some rumblings there. This is an interesting fact here. I've been the guest on John Moore's show for many weeks now. Well, I've been there, who knows, hundreds of times in the past. But we're doing kind of a regular thing where I'm a guest once a week on John's show. But a week ago, John's show was on Wednesday. It was the November 7th show. John posted it on YouTube, as he normally does. And very quickly thereafter, the show was censored. They did not want it on there. And so anyway, I talked to John. We were trying to figure out exactly what we were talking about that keyed off this, because we talked about many topics during that show. So anyway, I don't really know what it was that keyed the powers that be to censor that show. Finally, he made a protest and the show was reinstated. But certainly something hit the censor's eye that we were talking about. Gee, how could that possibly be? Something I say is controversial, or something that John says is controversial? Oh, well, just wanted you to know that little bit of history there. Lately, I've been doing a lot of radio interviewing, not as much as I did 10 years ago. I've just tried to relax and take it easy because apart from this one-hour a week show, I am really, 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 really busy with a lot of things in the background. But lately I've been doing more radio, and it's been proving beneficial. I think a lot more people are listening, a lot more people are getting a good story of what's going on in the world, and especially now with economic chaos on the horizon. I'll be mentioning that, but as long as I'm talking about that, it's very clear. If you look at Europe right now, they are erupting with riots today. The foreign news, by the way, you got to go to the foreign news media to get the real story on the economic austerity projects that are going on in Europe, in Greece, Syria bombing right now off of Turkey. In Russia supporting Syria, that Mideast is a cauldron. Israel bombing next door, and it wasn't Jordan, I forget. I don't have the article up here, but it was in the Gaza area. Israel bombing, literally bombing in the city areas. So at any rate, that place is just a cauldron of disaster and hate and demolition and. You go to Turkey, you go to Greece, you go to all of Europe is in turmoil, United Kingdom, England. And, of course, this is all planned. Now, remember, what I want you to learn out of all of this and the fact that this big comet is coming in, that these seem to be coupled together. Because when people look up next year and they see that comet in the sky, they're going to know worldwide that that ain't no little dirty snowball. And so the powers that be are worried. Why are they worried? Because people will realize that the king has no clothes, that the Wizard of Oz is that funny man in the baggy pants behind the curtain over there with no power at all. That's what they're afraid of. So they're getting all of this austerity stuff in line. Then they can pull the New York hurricane, Sandy, and then the following nor'easter. They are getting the world ready for basically control. Control. That's what it is all about, is so that people will riot, and then magically, out of nowhere, will come a leader who's going to lead us into the promised land, so to speak, in the New World Order sense of the word. So that's what we're headed for, folks. And by the way, I had a little email exchange with somebody, basically, when there are economic hard times, it's easy to hire the goons. And as a term, I use goons, the state patrol, the cops, the people that you used to think would be someone you could trust or call in emergency are going to turn into some people that you don't want to see right now, all over the country. These people are being supplied with military-grade equipment in your little local police force. What do they need that for? Well, the reality is that they don't. This is getting ready for some bad times. And if you're not prepared, you're going to be in for a big surprise. That's all I can tell you. Because the government isn't going to take care of you any more than they're taking care of the people up in the Northeast. That was a geopolitical social engineering action that took place with Sandy. Cleaning out that area, getting it ready for the austerity program, getting ready for those people to be stepping in line. That's what happened with Hurricane Sandy. So at any rate, another term for this is slavery. It's going on worldwide. The Canadian Prime Minister has been caught lying to the Canadian people about the state of the U.S. economy. Of course, Canada is indelibly linked to the United States economy, and so the fact that the head of Canada is lying to the people to keep them in order, and he's just the figurehead anyway, because the real owner of Canada is the Queen of England. Not England, mind you, the Queen of England, the family, the Rothschild family that the Queen belongs to. So at any rate, we are seeing social engineering on a massive scale. 60 million people in the Northeast now being prepped for austerity programs and being in line. All of those people who are not part of the system, that don't have a place to stay, are being forced out of there by Sandy, by ongoing weather conditions, weather bombing, I call it. So at any rate, I'm going to pull something up here while I'm talking, because I'm going to read on the air from my webpage, and I know a lot of people have already seen this. Let's see. Next announcement. Pluto is, I'll just mention something about the Petraeus scandal, sex scandal in Washington. He was about to testify in Congress about the Benghazi attack of 9/11. And so he is compromised with the sex scandal. All of the people in Washington, all of them, and if they ever get to these high positions, these people are so compromised, and this is a sex scandal. And these people can be done away with in a matter of minutes, all of them. So if they get out of line, if anything happens where they're no longer needed, they can be compromised in a snap of a finger, in a New York second. And out of there they go. And so anyway, how effective can his testimony be if he is involved in this sex scandal? Well, clearly he can't. And so that's the whole point here. That's the only comment I have, is that he is being neutralized, basically, so that any effective testimony that he might have simply won't happen. Here's an issue that I've been talking about, but will reiterate. The moon, go to the moon XPRIZE, and is now underway, where people are racing to develop a capability to get to the moon. But what's going on here? We have a New World Order Boys private little club space programs linked with NASA, hiring NASA guys who will work for anybody for a buck, sell their soul to the devil. No problem there. They've already done it. And so anybody that flashes rolls a quarter down the street, watch all the NASA scientists get out and run down the street after it. Because that's what they do. They don't know how to live on their own. They're squirrels that forgot how to store nuts and gather nuts. And so the private space programs that are developing around NASA, this is all just a control aspect of the New World Order. And the people that will succeed are the people that play the game right. At any rate, just a quick statement on that, that it's unfortunate that space is being divvied up and sold to the people who play the game. And by the way, most of those people that have made huge, huge money off the internet did it by selling your private information, your rights, whether it's the Facebook, whether it's whatever aspect of the internet it is. The money that was made was done at your expense, let's put it that way. Here's a posting I put on my webpage, and I'm going to read it. Most people have probably read this, a lot of people, but a lot of people possibly have not seen this posting on my webpage. And so it's kind of self-explanatory. It's about the calculate primes and my prime number work. Here it goes. I'm going to read it word for word, and then you can kind of ponder this. It says, a short note for mathematicians and everyone else. When David Hilbert listed his 23 unsolved mathematical problems in 1900 that he believed would shape the future of mathematics, and which formed the basis for what we now call the Millennium Problems, many of the problems centered around the understanding of the prime numbers. But there was one reason he did not include the oldest known problem in all of mathematics. That was to understand the patterns of the prime numbers. The problem had proved so elusive to everyone in mathematics and physics and mathematical logic and set theory and mathematical analysis that he and everyone else believed the problem had no solution. So it was not included in the noted unsolved problems. The closest problem to a direct understanding of prime numbers was the so-called Riemann hypothesis, which deals with a solution to an equation called the zeta function, a prime number related problem, but not directly related to the direct calculation of prime numbers. Very simply, no one ever thought or even imagined in their wildest dreams that anyone would ever solve this oldest of unsolved problems, originated by the ancient Greeks over 2,500 years ago, to directly calculate the prime numbers from a simple formula. So firmly entrenched was this belief that the most entrusted computer firewalls, as well as telecommunications encryption software and firmware, in the highest levels of military and banking and government were based on this assumption. When my work, which I have termed Calculate Primes, was released over a half decade ago, it not only resolved the oldest problem in all of mathematics, it did so in a manner that almost anyone can understand. It destroyed the prime number-based encryption systems and showed that the prime numbers formed an elegant closed mathematical system. It also created the basis for a new understanding of how we should look at numbers in a natural way and created a new number system. But why am I posting this some 7 years later? Because there may have been more fanfare if Hilbert would have included it in his list of 23 Millennium Problems. But since it was not there, the world of mathematics can choose to ignore it as if nothing happened. There is a blockade in the mathematics world. Is this partly because just as my work was being released, a field prize was given for a paper that claimed that the prime numbers were random? Or was it because there was a period of hushing the fact that all the high-level encryption systems were no longer safe? Or was it because it gave a lot more credence to my work on the electrical nature of the solar system and that comets are not dirty snowballs and that the redshift of galaxies and related quasars are not related to their velocities, but related to the light passing out of non-uniform electric fields based on fusion in the central cores of these powerful celestial objects? Whatever the reason, since the mathematics world has chosen to ignore the core discovery, the generator function, which directly calculates the prime numbers and gives them mathematical order, unfortunately I have to post this note here asking, what's the deal? How long can the mathematics and world of physics ignore this? The generator function also shows how the building blocks of atomic and nuclear spectrum are built just as the prime numbers are built from the basic building blocks of 0 and 1. So I have started to call this the 24th problem. A bit presumptuous, or a necessary announcement? The worst part is that this should now be the basis of new mathematical courses for kids in school and new forms of mathematical analysis. And then I sign it my name. Anyway, think about it. Think about that a little bit. On to the next topic. Oh, let's see. A number of years ago, and I don't even know how long ago this was, I had somewhat of a conflict with the companies that were installing remote water readers, electrical radio water meter readers in your houses across the country. And so I called up the companies, I called up the cities that were doing this, and according to everybody, oh, there's no problem. And the cities say, well, we called up the companies that are doing this, and they don't have anything in any of these electronic devices that would cause you to be alarmed to have this radio in your house. Well, now the confirmation is out. These babies monitor everything you do. If you go into the bathroom, if you're taking a drink of water in the kitchen sink, if you're making love with your wife in the bedroom, no matter what you're doing, these babies are monitoring your life. If the kids come home from school, somebody's listening. If the kids go off to school, somebody's listening. If there's nobody home, they know. Anyway, it's now confirmed. They are monitoring everything in your house. So thanks to our little local governments all over the country, they have monitors in everybody's houses now. So, and they're very adamant that that has to be in there. Now, let's look at the real need to measure water usage. Most of you get a bill. I think water in most places, if you get it from a municipality, comes about every 3 months. The bill comes about every 3 months. So you have necessity four points in the year, time points, to read a meter. You don't need some sophisticated piece of electronic that can sample every drop of water that you use. Why does it matter? Who's really interested in that? But they say, oh, it might be for the future when we really have to control the use of water. No, it's one reason and one reason only. They wanted an excuse to get a radio in your house. And so at any rate, that's what's going on. Complete 24/7 monitoring. Okay, this week I'm going to talk about two things on the main science hour. One is, let me just look over my notes here. Let me quick talk about products for a second. I'm sorry. I'll just take 1 minute, rush through this. There is still a little bit of corn that is left, and these are in 10-pound boxes at $60. For a 10-pound box, that includes shipping to the 50 states, not available in foreign, no foreign shipping of the corn. the calendar is doing better and better all the time. It's called the Emergency Survival Recalendar Portable Sun Star Clock. And it's an amazing device for $39.95. If you want really a cool present for somebody for the holidays, and they're kind of a techie or astronomy, or they like time and calendars, or if they're a survival person that needs to get some survival gear, this is the thing to get for them. $39.95 plus $5 shipping to any place in the 50 states. We will charge for shipping to foreign countries, of course, also. Or you can get both of these free if you have over a $400 purchase on the webpage. Any combination of products that amount to more than $400, and you will get both the corn and the calendar free. We will ship you those. So at any rate, very important items there. The corn is the dent corn, the original dent corn. And remember also, as I talk about the Passover, this comet, the potential for sulfur dioxide coming into the atmosphere, and just in general, for emergency in general, and these are only available on my webpage. The corn is only available on my webpage. The calendar, only available on my webpage. You will not find a product like that anyplace else on the planet or in this end of the solar system. The modular filtration and water storage system. These are big 6.5 gallon tanks with screw top lids. They come with two dome, the new high capacity dome filters, and then three storage tanks, 6.5 gallon. So total, you will have up to 20 gallons of stored filtered water. And this is huge. And plus, you can buy extra tanks to go along with this, so you can store as much as you want. This is very important to have very secure covers on your water supply. If there's dust, if there's nuclear radiation, etc. The other product that is unique to my website is the pre-filter. This fits any of the standard on the market gravity water filters. It fits any and all of them. The big ones, the small ones, and everything in between. Including the one I was just telling you about. It pre-filters water. There's powders that you get with this. These are medical food grade powders. You can pre-filter the water, and then when these powders become so full of gunk, oil, radiation powder, oil, chemicals, whatever it is that filters them out, does a pre-filtering, and then the water goes into your nice clean gravity water filter and does a final filtering of bacteria of up to whatever virus sizes they will handle, and other chemicals, etc. So you have a pre-filter. You don't want to be pouring sludgy water into your nice filter. So that pre-filter is huge. It's very important, and a lot of people use it every day. There are many, many people that have high sulfur content. They have other minerals in their water, and they use that pre-filter to get most of that out of there before it goes into their regular water filter, so they don't contaminate or gunk up their main water filter. Okay, plus all the books and DVDs. 6 books, the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, the weather book, Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, the Calculate Primes book with DVD, and then the last book, very important book, the Diamond Principle. The CDs, there's a whole range. I'm not going to go through all of these. I mentioned earlier the 18-hour lecture series, 2-CD set on the physics of ancient celestial disasters. I still have the CD, 110 pictures of the American Southwest from 45,000 foot altitude all the way from LA to Denver. Amazing. You get to see the entire American Southwest from almost, it looks like you're in orbit around the Earth, and you see the details. You can zoom in on these. It's great. You can see the details from a distance of the American Southwest. That's there. It's in a CD, 110 high resolution pictures. my DVD set, two DVD set that has my historically significant videos of me giving lectures. You can see me when I'm real young. You can see me when I'm a bit older and through my career all the way up to modern times. That's a two DVD set. Okay, enough of that. There's a lot there. So at any rate, if you, for your holiday shopping, make my homepage one of your stops at least. And remember, you can send, you can order and have your items sent to anywhere in the world. So just put the person's address where you want to send it, and we'll ship it to that person. Okay, modern day Passover. Just a quick outline here. Let's look back in history at what happened. We talk about this, and by the way, Moses was part of the royal family, so to speak, in Egypt. He had been trained by the secret society, so he was a guy that came out of there with the knowledge that only emperors had. He was going to be the emperor of Egypt, but he was an adopted Israelite from the Israelite slaves. And so at any rate, he had the knowledge. And what one of the things that he knew was that when the these comets approach, he gave the instructions on what to do for the Israelites to bottle themselves up in their huts, in their sheds, their houses, and what to do. So basically, here is what happened. They killed the lamb, the largest animal they could, and prepared to have all the food and water they needed for this event. And they, of course, did not understand what was going on. They were just told to do this, or you're going to be dead. So very simply. Okay, so the blood of the lamb they painted over the doorstep, so that they knew, okay, this was an Israelite house. These people are in there; they're secure. And don't crack that door. Don't crack a window. Don't go in that house. Don't open the door, so to speak. So okay, so basically that was it. The Mayans did the same thing. The Mayans have a record where they had to go into their huts, seal the doors and windows so that no air could go in or out, and they waited there. And they waited until Venus the comet passed. And the Mayans are much more specific. They know that that was Venus the comet, Quetzalcoatl, who was passing by. And their religious myth belief was that if they lived through this event and they came out, and they gave thanks to God, that their God, that they had lived through this, they were going to rebuild their temple city. So the Mayans, into the modern Mayans, now we're talking about the ancient Mayans back around 1500 BC. This tradition carried all the way up to the modern Mayans, which we saw, we have their history that runs up to about 1400 AD, and they still were celebrating that same. About every 54 years, they would celebrate the same Passover event. They would go into their huts, paint blood over the door, seal the doors and windows, and if they came out and Earth had not been destroyed by Venus, now why would they pick Venus? That's because Venus was a comet. Back in the old days, it became a planet. So at any rate, the Passover is what I want to concentrate on, because we now have a big comet rolling into the solar system, and this baby in January 2014, I feel, has a possibility, and I can't say if it's 100% or 1% or 40%, I can't really tell. It's hard to say. We are going to probably see some severe weather effects from this event, but we have a five-way electrical alignment. We have Jupiter, we have the comet, we have Earth, with a new moon passing, we have Venus at inferior conjunction, and we have the solar maximum occurring all at the same time, January 2014. So at any rate, could Earth start to discharge to where we're going to see sulfur dioxide atoms? Now, the comet's already going to be discharging to that area. It'll be up and behind us in the solar system, and it could be drawing that sulfur dioxide in from the region of Jupiter. If it does, we could connect into that too, and we could have an aurora event. We could have a sulfur dioxide event, and along with a lot of other poisonous volatiles, sulfur hydrogen, sulfur oxygen, carbon hydrogen, carbon oxygen, carbon monoxide. We could have the nitrogen compounds, the whole laundry list of NHs, and nitrous oxygen, all of these chemicals potentially building up and coming into our atmosphere as we connect along with the comet, which is going to be not real close, but in our path along with Jupiter out there. So at any rate, could we be headed for a modern-day Passover event is my question. I don't know. I would hope that we wouldn't. But I would hope also that we better get prepared in case this happens. People will be able to live through this and then come out the other side and be able to rebuild their lives. And that's why I think the world economically is being driven into this austerity program. I think that the powers that be see this baby coming, and they know that the world is going to explode into chaos, and they want to maintain control. Okay, so at any rate, that's the point. Now, what are we going to be able to see? Okay, that's the question, and where? And by the way, I am developing charts and graphs on where to look. By the way, November 27th, we have a very good electrical alignment between this comet and the little planet Mercury, and we're going to be able to see this in the morning sky with Mercury just on the horizon before sunrise, and the comet is going to be out beyond the orbit of Jupiter. But here's the point. I personally, after watching Venus this past month and watching for it to have any activity, what I'm realizing is that we probably are not going to see, you'd have to have good satellite close-range data to see any effects on the planet Mercury. And by the way, that might be why NASA has put its satellite out around Mercury, so they can monitor this. That data will go to the New World Order people, not to the Tier 2 NASA scientists, but to the New World Order people whose Tier 1 scientists really control those satellites. They will be gathering data on what's going on with little Mercury. But anyway, that first encounter with Mercury, November 27th, coming up, give or plus or minus 2 days. So at any rate, because Mercury moves very quickly in its orbit, that electrical alignment will be very brief, but very significant. But I don't think we'll be able to see anything from Earth with Mercury. It would be good to watch. I hope people are watching. But the comet is just too far away yet. It hasn't gotten close enough. It's still out by the orbit of Jupiter. Okay, so at any rate, but what are we going to be able to see like next September, mid-September to early October, when this comet comes very, very close to Mars, about 7 million miles? That's very close astronomically, and that comet will be thumping up, getting building up. According to the charts which NASA has put out, and actually the ones I saw came from the Russian Observatory, which discovered the comet, that's about the time when this comet is going to start to become naked eye visible. And okay, so let's talk about naked eye visible. Let's all go out on an imaginary trip to the American Southwest, or let's start out in your city. You go out at night, you're in town, you're in a little town in the United States, or you're in the city. How many stars can you see? Well, in the city, probably you'd be lucky to see one or two or three stars or big planets. Jupiter, Venus, you might see. You won't see very much because of the city lights. So go out to the edge of town. You might start to see 100 stars in all of the sky, the brightest 100 stars. Okay, now let's go out into the countryside, 100 miles away from the city. So let's get away from those city lights on a dark night in the winter, in the summer, whatever it is, the sky is really dark, clear, no clouds. You're going to be able to see between 3 and 5,000 stars. Now, we're going to use this magnitude, it's called in astronomy, as a reference point. That's magnitude 6. Okay, now, the magnitude scale is an indication of the stars that you can see. So magnitude 6 is our reference point. It's plus 6. Okay, now if you go to a really, really dark area where it's much clearer, and this is observing with the naked eye, you might be able to see some plus 8 magnitude stars. Okay, so just to give you a clue, the higher the number, as you go 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, those are fainter and fainter stars. The higher the number, the fainter the star or planet or whatever. Okay, so you're never going to see with the naked eye, for example, a magnitude 10 or 14 star. You would need special equipment, astronomical equipment, or very, very good binoculars just to see those faint objects. As you go down to 0, these are objects that are very bright, okay? And so the point here is that, as you go up to higher numbers, the objects get smaller and smaller, but as you drop down, as you go to magnitude 4 or 2 or 0, the objects are getting bigger and brighter. And so the point is that with this comet, according to the charts that I have seen regarding the comet, the official release charts, around mid-September of next year, this comet will begin to come into that zone of naked eye visible. That means if you have a set of binoculars, you will be able to see it much sooner. Binoculars are going to increase your ability to see tenfold or 20-fold. And so I would encourage people to get a pair of binoculars. It's something you should have anyway. And I'm not trying to advertise any particular place, but there's a place called Orion. They sell amateur astronomical equipment. And the reason why you want to buy from somebody that's authorized is because they know what you need for astronomy. It's not just your average set of field binoculars. You want all of the optics to be coated. The term is fully coated optics. Fully coated optics. In other words, there's a coating that they put on all the prisms internal to the binoculars, all the lenses on both sides, all of the optics, all are coated. And what this coating does is it makes the glass perfectly smooth. And so the fine little details you pick up, it makes the little details very clear in your binoculars. And you don't need a great big pair. I would also encourage you to get a tripod that will crank up to where either you can sit on a stool or stand up in so your binoculars are firmly adjusted or held in place. And then you're not trying to hold binoculars in your hands, which you're kind of shaking and moving, etc. And so, anyway, that's something, it's not a big investment, but binoculars are something you should have anyway. And then you can use those as you go on field trips or family vacations. It's always good to pack a pair of binoculars. They don't have to be big and heavy. They're just a nice, handy pair, but fully coated optics. Make sure you get some that are designed for astronomical viewing. Okay, so that means that for the average person with binoculars, you'll be able to see this comet early in September of this coming year, 2013. But the actual close encounter where it's going to start to have interactions with Mars is going to be in around mid-September to October 1st is its closest encounter with Mars, and then for a time period afterwards, maybe 2 weeks or more possibly, where it's going to be interacting with the planet Mars. Okay, so that is next fall, 2013, around mid-September, maybe earlier if you have good astronomical amateur equipment. And then up to, leading up to mid-September, up to October 1st, the closest approach. And then as the comet moves into the inner solar system, it will be naked eye visible. That means that everybody on the planet's going to be able to see this baby. The official chart puts it more like into November, where it's going to be naked eye visible. So that could possibly be true. I don't know. I don't really know. It's hard to predict. Comets can fizzle out or they can become bigger than expected. But it would be good to have a set of binoculars. And where you would be looking at that time would be up in the eastern sky between 2 a.m. and sunrise. And you'll see Mars, the red planet, and just above it will be the comet. So it'll be very easy to find. You don't need a lot of experience to find this. And then what I'm hoping is that we're going to see a light show where this comet is electrically interacting with Mars. You know, and so if people start to see this on a wide scale, they're going to understand what I'm talking about when I talk about the red hand of death, when I talk about a possible Passover event coming a number of months later in January of 2014. So at any rate, in January, by the way, in January 15th of this coming year, 2013, Earth will have a perfect electrical alignment with this comet. The comet will be out near the orbit of Jupiter, so it's questionable whether we will have any interaction that's noticeable. We don't really know, but this comet is coming in. It's developing. It'll be out near the orbit of Jupiter. And so the question is, are we going to have some kind of interaction? We do have the new moon passing at that time. So that gives us that pulse, that impulse, when the new moon breaks away and stops blocking the solar wind. And we get that shot, that pulse that comes in from the solar wind that finally comes in and hits our plasma magnetic field. We can get a jolt like a spark plug. And with that comet out there, it could be the first time if we connect into that comet, it would be pretty amazing. But there's no guarantee that we will. So January 15th will be the first indication on planet Earth that something is going on with that comet. Hard to predict, but something to be aware of. So what did the ancients do? Let's analyze what they did. First of all, they killed the biggest lamb that they had. They drew the blood and they painted it over the door. That was for their food. So they had stored food and water in their huts, and they were going to be in there for an indeterminate amount of time, probably a week or possibly two. We don't know. We don't really have a good record of that, of how long they were in there, but they would stay in there until they were given the signal to come out. Okay, so the blood over the door, what was that all about? Well, that's to indicate to anybody passing by that in that hut, don't open that door. Those people are in there, and they're hiding. They're basically waiting this out. What happened to the people that didn't go in to a sealed container, hut, or whatever? They died. They all died. It was not good. And so, a lot of the Egyptians did not know about this, and a lot of them died. So the ones that were surviving here were the Israelites, and that's the way it's written. Who knew to tell them this? Well, Moses did. Moses knew to tell them. He knew what was going on because of his training in the secret societies in ancient Egypt. Could we be in for a modern Passover type of event? I believe we could be. And I don't know, I can't say, maybe we're not going to have any effects at all. It's hard to say, but I would want people to at least have the shot at preparing. And by the way, when you prepare for something, preparation is the same. It's no different than if you're preparing for some kind of man-made event, an austerity program in the government where you have to take care of yourself, you need your own food and water, etc. And then, okay, say that you come out the other side of this. You open up your door, the comet has passed by, the water has been poisoned. you're going to have to continue living. You got to graze food. You might have to water plants with food that goes through a filter. You're going to need some fairly significant amounts of water. At that point, the rainwater will be coming down. It'll still be draining some of that poisonous material from the atmosphere, but that will go away fairly quickly. But the thing to do would be to have a greenhouse where you're also protected. The dirt in there, or the growing medium in your greenhouse, is sealed up and protected. At least you would have a place to grow some sprouts, some spinach, some greens, some other things like that. And remember that a lot of fish and animals will be dead. So if you're a hunter, fisherman, you think you're going to survive on that, forget about it. A lot of those animals might die in this poisoning that could happen. So you have to really be prepared to take care of yourself. I would suggest seeds that you can sprout, and then also grow things that are small, things that don't take 90 or 100 days. I would concentrate on things that take 30 days to sprout and grow, like spinach, like I'm not an expert in sprouting or plants or gardening, but that kind of information you would be able to do, would be able to get. The Lakota Indians, the Mayans, all talk about these events where they had the Passover. So as far as visibility, right around mid-September next year is when the average person, naked eye visible, will start to see this comet. Could we have other comets coming in at the into the solar system also? Very likely. We've had a good string of comets coming in from the southern area of the solar system, and that's a possibility also. So I'll be continuing with this thread next week and as weeks come along, but make sure you stay tuned as I develop these concepts and also post the charts, where to look, what to look for, etc. And I'm just going to go back. We've got about about a month left before the holidays hit us here. And so I want to really encourage you. The things on my webpage are unique. The calendar, the modular filtration and storage system, the pre-filter, those are things you're not going to find anyplace else. The CD of the American Southwest, 110 high-altitude, high-resolution photos. You can see the disasters that have hit Earth and washed down through that American Southwest, a very tortured area, but very visible because it's a lot of open area where there's not a lot of vegetation. You can really see what happened. So at any rate, this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. The webpage, jmccsci.com, short for jmccannyscience.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.